of our wayward committee members. Welcome to the Capitol. I don't normally sound like this, but I've had that horrible cold that many of you have, and so I'm hanging on by a thread, a little bit of a longer thread this week than last week. You are in the Senate Education and General Government Committee, just in case you didn't know that already. We have a rule here, if you've never been here to my committee, you have to turn off all your cell phones and PDAs, because I find it incredibly rude to have them ring while we have witnesses testifying. If your cell phone or any noise like that goes off, I'll be asking you to make a generous contribution to the Common School Fund to help fund education in Oregon. If you haven't signed up already, the sign-up list is on the side table over there. We have a long committee, quite a few folks, so we're going to try to ask you not to overlap testimony. If you're just going to say the same thing as the person in front of you, just say, I agree with this person. I have one additional thing I'd like to comment. Please don't read your testimony if you can help it, because we can all read that. Just summarize it. Speak from the heart. That's the best way to do it. And I'm going to do it a little bit differently with each issue. This one sort of lends itself to sort of the pros and the cons. So I'm going to give the first about 45 minutes to the folks who want to make changes, and the second 45 minutes to those who don't want to make changes, and then we'll have some cleanup at the end for people to do some rebuttal. First up, we're going to hear from Senator Posonski. He's the author of one of these bills, and I'll have the committee administrator, Ms. Richardson, just kind of give a general summary of each bill. We're going to open a public hearing, yes, because now I have a full committee, so we are in full committee. I'm going to open a public hearing on all three bills, Senate Bill 217, Senate Bill 382, and Senate Bill 522. And Ms. Richardson, can you just sort of give us an overview about all three of those? They all sort of deal with the same issue, so I guess we'll just sort of open it up for that.
Yes. In general, they deal with the governance of voluntary organizations that administer interscholastic activities, designating interscholastic activity districts, placing schools within those districts. They vary in who has authority to do them, and if that's as general as you want, I can put there.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I will note that the committee has a -1 amendment in front of it for Senate Bill 382.
And Senate Bill 382 is yours truly's bill. So we had amendments drafted to that one. And I don't know where we're going with this bill today, any of these. So I just want to hear from folks. I don't really need to put on the record what I want to make changes to, because I think Senator Posonski can sort of speak to where we're going. Take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Floyd Posonski, State Senator, Senate District 4. Senate District 4 includes a large portion of Lane County and Douglas County. The bill that I brought before you is Senate Bill 522. And the reason I brought 522 is because I had some discussions with individuals who were concerned with how the power of the OSA has been used. In doing research, it came to my attention that it appears that there's been an improper delegation of power to OSAA. OSAA is a private entity, and our state constitution says in Article 4, Section 1, Sub 1, is that basically certain powers are reserved to the legislative branch except for initiative and referendum. It is my opinion, based on my review of the type of entity that OSAA is, and it's not about the entity itself, but it is a nonprofit private industry or entity, excuse me. And because of that, they are not allowed to do what is known as government functions. I have asked and received a second legal counsel opinion, which has been handed out to you. It's dated yesterday's date, and it basically reviewed a couple of other attorney general opinions that we had come across and asked them to determine what if any merit it would have as to the argument that I bring before you. And they basically have said in the closing of that is based on the nature of the activities performed by the OSAA and the case law, and that has been found that OSAA and other entities like OSAA to be performing state action. In their opinion, it continues to be one that a delegation of authority by statute and administrative rule to OSAA to regulate intergovernmental activities may be in violation of Section 1, Sub 1 of Article 4. Now, this opinion does not say outright that they're in violation, but the reality is when you look at the framework of how OSA is, what it is, and what it's been delegated to do, it's my opinion that they are, in fact, in violation of the the Oregon Constitution. Now, this is, shouldn't be earth-shattering news to many people, because I brought this to the attention of OSAA during the summer and tried them and told them that I know a lot of people that you're going to hear from today are going to be talking about how the most recent decisions were made by that organization as it pertained to scheduling and classifying schools into this current school year sports programs. My issue is not that. I mean, the reality is if OSA was acting as an advisory group, and under the bill that calls for the superintendent of education to oversee this group, or you could actually amend the bill to have it be the State Board of Education. But if they acted in an advisory capacity and they gave their advice to the school board or to our State Board of Education or to the superintendent of public education, then they could actually rule on that and say, yes, we agree with that advisory opinion, or those that the power, not the power, but the position that the OSA has taken as to delegating how the school year is going to work with the school programs. I believe that would be constitutional. The issue here is that you have a private entity making performing government functions in violation of the Constitution. Let me give you another example of how this would work. If you had a school board that was looking to site a new school, and they said, we need to get a group of citizens together as an advisory board to go through the community and cite where they think the best opportunities would be to have that new school built, they would be an advisory board to the school board. They would come back and give their recommendations, and more than likely they would get multiple sites, and they probably would give their priority. But they would not be making the decision. All they would be doing is going to the school board for that school district and say, this is our recommendation. And then that school board, who is elected, who is delegated to perform government functions, would in fact perform that function. That's all I'm here to say that I think needs to be done, is that we need to just basically make it clear that the power to make these decisions is not in a private entity, but is in fact in the body that has the authority under the Oregon Constitution to perform those tasks. Clearly, as the bill, Senate Bill 522 says, you can in fact have this organization or any other voluntary organization serve in that advisory capacity. They just can't make the final decision. Let me just take the other two bills that are before you, Senate Bill 217 and Senate Bill 382. The issue that I think that you need to consider there is that I believe both those bills basically just put sideboards on the decisions of OSAA. It does not address the constitutional issue that is raised in Senate Bill 522. And so I don't think you can get there unless you're going to carry forward the belief, and I believe the misbelief, that OSAA as a private entity has the right to do a government function. Now, when you look at those two areas, clearly the case law, their own articles of incorporation, clearly shows that OSA is a private entity. So that's phase one of the two-part test. The other is government function. And if anyone hears to tell you that they're not performing government function by regulating the interscholastic activities of schools and setting the schedules that they set and how it impacts and how it works within the school system, I would submit to you that that they are wrong, that they are, in fact, doing a government function. And I believe that the opinion that you have before you sets forth how that has been demonstrated. Clearly, the Legislative Council did not want to make a position as to whether or not they were in violation of Article 4, Section 1. But I would submit to you, because they are a private entity and that they are, in fact, performing government functions, that they are, in fact, in violation of the Oregon Constitution. Again, the fixes are very easy. Just make them advisory and have them report to either the superintendent of schools or to the state school board.
Thank you, Senator. I have a question for you. Because in the letter opinion that you have, the last paragraph on the first page, it indicates in the Attorney General's opinion of 1978 that OSAA actions do constitute a state action within the meaning of the 14th Amendment. And then the last sentence of that paragraph says, contrary to these decisions, the Court of Appeals has confirmed the authority of OSAA to act in the area of interscholastic activities. I've not read the case cited there, OSAA versus Stout. And then on the back page, it says Oregon appellate courts have not ruled directly on the question. So what does the Stout case say that they can do?
I don't have the Stout case. I got this yesterday and didn't get a chance to pull the opinion.
Okay.
And speaking with Ms. Hunt, we both agreed that the question that's before you as to whether or not this private entity is performing government function has not been addressed directly.
Mm-hmm.
What I believe the portion of that opinion on the first page where it talks about that for the meaning of the 14th Amendment that they are conducting or constitutes state action clearly gives me the perspective that that they are in fact performing government functions. And because of that, I believe that if the courts were given the question as to whether or not OSAA as a private entity was in violation of the Constitution, Article 4, Section 1, because it was performing government functions, that the court would in fact rule that they are.
Mm-hmm. And then the second question before I turn it over to my committee, I know that you and I have both reviewed the City of Eugene's lawsuit, but I can't remember, and maybe I'll ask the, or not the City of Eugene, the school district.
4J.
Yeah, and maybe I'll ask them that question. I know Superintendent Russell is here, but whether they have sued on grounds that OSA does not have authority and is violating the Constitution, do you know if they are?
Madam Chair, committee members, I believe they did not. I spoke with the attorney who was representing the school district after they had gone through the actual hearing through the administrative law process.
Okay.
After that time when they were still in the process of setting the appeal. This information was brought to their attention, but I know one reason why they may not have decided to bring it forward is because it wasn't on the record during the hearing, and so to take it further, it wasn't, let's say, preserved for appeal.
Okay.
But yeah, my understanding is that they did not, and my understanding is the information that was presented to them, which is basically what you have heard from me, with the exception of this most recent opinion, was not given to them until after they'd gone through the administrative hearing process.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Cruz, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you. I squirm a lot. thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Przanski, who makes up the OSA? Who makes up the membership?
My understanding, Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, my understanding they are made up of individuals who are part of various schools within the state of Oregon.
And to be exact, I think there are 290 schools that make up the membership of OSAA. aren't those public bodies?
Well, they may be public bodies, Senator, but the reality is they can't delegate their power away to a private entity.
Further question, Madam Chair. For example, in the current decision for the restructuring of the system, I guess OSAA first brought forward a plan to go to 5 classifications, and the member schools rejected that plan, and OSA went back and restructured to 6, which is what the member schools requested. And then when that plan was brought forward after many, many public hearings, the vote of the member schools was 90% in favor of the plan. So I guess I'm wondering where the problem is here.
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, it's called the Constitution. I mean, the reality, what you're saying is it's okay to delegate the power that we have as the legislature to a private entity. That is in violation of the Constitution. It's very easy to fix. All you have to do is make OSAA an advisory group to someone that has the power under the Constitution to exercise government functions. That's as simple as that. And no matter how many people agreed or disagreed with whatever decision was made, I believe it was in violation of the Oregon Constitution. This is a constitutional issue. It has nothing to do with the actual decision that was made or put before anybody. It's who made the decision.
Madam Chair, I disagree with that.
Senator Cruz.
I mean, quite simply, for the legislature to be micromanaging extracurricular activities, I think is beyond our scope when we've got an organization that has the expertise and authority necessary to make the right decisions. I think the authority rests in the right place currently.
All right. Well, we have a disagreement here, but we'll move on. Thank you for that. Senator Przanski, thank you. I think that does it.
Okay.
And we'll move on. I appreciate you coming to the committee this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we're going to move to our first panel, and that would be George Russell, Superintendent of the Eugene 4J School District, Dave Hancock, Athletic Director of South Eugene High School, and Randy Bernstein, Principal of South Eugene High School. Come on forward, gentlemen. And if you'll just state your name for the record. And Mr. Russell, do you want to start? Welcome. Good to
see
you.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair. Senators, George Russell, Superintendent, Eugene School District 4J.
Good morning. Randy Bernstein, Principal at South Eugene High School.
Good morning. Dave Hancock, FI Director, teacher at South Eugene High School.
Great.
Madam Chair, Senators, I'll be brief because I want you to have the opportunity to hear from some of the people who've come with us from Eugene, including the administrators and teachers and parents and students who have been impacted by the decision of redistricting by the OSAA. And 3 points I want to make with respect to this and the impacts that it's had and why we believe and have taken the course of challenging that decision and the redistricting process. And if you have some questions about the legal basis of that, I know that Joel DeVore, who is our attorney, is here and can respond to any of the questions around that, Madam Chair, that you raised with Senator Przanski.
Thank you, and he is on one of our panels.
Yes. Thanks. And in particular, I want to address the three major issues of concern that we don't believe were adequately considered when the OSAA made their decisions among the criteria that have been established. And those are the impact on student achievement and student time away from the classroom, the costs involved for the schools in impacted, and the safety concerns that have been raised by our parents and community. And our school board has taken an aggressive position that this is not an appropriate decision, that there were other avenues that could have been pursued given appropriate deliberation and discussion, and that given those other kinds of considerations could have mitigated the impacts on our students and parents and schools. And we have a number of people here who want to talk about those impacts but have the concern that that this needs to be addressed, and that the proposed legislation with perhaps some modification could adequately address our concerns, but also continue to allow the OSAA to operate in a fashion that is best for the state of Oregon and the schools and school districts that it serves.
Thank you.
I'll be brief, too, because I know some of the students, for example, and parents can tell their specific stories. But
and can you restate your name for the record?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Randy Bernstein.
Great.
Principal at South Eugene. As principal and speaking for our staff, our number one mission is educating our students, keeping them safe and healthy. And basically this decision in our minds flies in the face of our ability to do our best job in those areas. Instructionally, I'll just briefly state a few things. Rather than playing our crosstown rivals, and some of the students can speak to the importance of that in terms of community and competition and what that does for our city and for our district. In terms of instruction, we have multiple trips now that are basically 13-hour round trips. Students board about 11:30, 11:45, return 12 to 1 o'clock in the morning. They're missing a half day of school. The next day they're coming in and often not getting to school on time because of lack of sleep or just aren't in the type of condition where they can be anywhere near their best. So essentially they're missing a half day of school. They're in some ways missing a full day of school, if you consider how they're functioning the next morning. The concern I've heard, it comes from teachers, it comes from students, it comes from parents, it comes from every one of our stakeholders. Teachers have noted to me again and again that they know who the athletes are, not just because they're missing from their afternoon classes, but because they're bedraggled in their morning classes. Safety concern, we've been lucky this year. In terms of things that could have happened on four trips for just the basketball, for example, down to Medford. I don't know how many for volleyball. The passes, of course, are a concern when we're traveling 170 miles each way, 340 miles round trip in the middle of winter. And finally, just resources. We can talk about the resources in terms of money, but it's not just resources in terms of money. You know, we look to our parents for support. Many of our parents are stretched just to support their kids in terms of getting them to and from the buses and back and forth on time and paying whatever extra costs. When we look for their support for other ways to support the classroom, frankly, they're tapped out. Those are just a few of the points. I'll turn it over to Mr. Hancock.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Dave Hancock, Athletic Director at South Eugene High School. And I'll try not to repeat a lot of the things that have just been said here. Instead, I would try to just relate some real-life situations. We've now gone through two seasons, fall and winter. And as from the original talking about some of the things that were originally put forward, the 6A or the 5A classification was really brought about as a football issue. And we enjoyed the football season. It's a one-day-a-week event, either for sub-varsity or varsity. Travel's not really an issue. Major schools like us, or big schools, we usually sponsor 18 sports every year. And each of those sports, with exceptions of maybe your tennis and golf, have three levels. So you're talking about a lot of teams and a lot of kids. And where we found this very disturbing is when all of a sudden with the 6A competitions, they being just only six teams a lot of times in leagues instead of a league of eight or nine, we ended up playing each other three times as we did this last winter. You know, the whole design of it made, for instance, with us, five trips down south in a period of 7 weeks. And, you know, that takes a big toll of a Tuesday and a Friday. Every Tuesday and Friday, you're either on the road or at home. A lot of times we had two trips on the road. So, you know, these are things we're coming to terms with. You know, as far as revenue, obviously, it's not just a cost, it's a loss of revenue. And we do not have parents travel away. We do not have students even support our local games. We have an average attendance of this year of 20 students attending high school girls basketball games as opposed to over 100 last year. And a lot of that is because we play on the same nights, used to play on different nights. I mean, these are just some problems that have come up. I guess the last question that I would leave is if the criteria is the enrollment of a school equals league parity, if that is the analogy for all of this, then the question has to be raised in 3 years, where what will happen with the Lane County area schools, because Thurston is growing and Springfield's growing and Willamette's growing. Well, suddenly we have five teams that are 6A caliber teams in the Eugene area, and then will we be sending Churchill and North Eugene down south to Klamath Falls and to balance out the leagues again? Somewhere along the line, perhaps league or school enrollment is not the main criteria to devise high school leagues.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Does anyone on the committee have any questions at this point? I think we'd like to hear from some students and parents. Thanks for coming up.
Thank you.
I'd like to hear from Heidi Camp, Wendy Bryant, and Zach Zosel. If you'll all three come up. And just whoever would like to start, just state your name for the record and where you go to school, and then start in.
All right. I'm Heidi Camp. I come from Eugene. I live in Springfield, but commute every day to Eugene for Spanish immersion at Sheldon. I play two sports, both volleyball and swimming. Volleyball was the major sport this year for me for travel issues. For instance, 1 week we ended up on Saturday traveling to South Medford for a volleyball tournament, all day, taking all day. Then on Tuesday we had a game against North Medford, another travel day. Thursday we had a game against Roseburg, another travel day. And the next Saturday we ended up going to Bend. That was, out of a 7-day week, 4 days traveling. I was not present at any part of my school. Even though I was at school, I wasn't really there for any of my classes. I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, but I slept through many of my classes. I ended up getting behind in school. And with not passing every class with C- or better, you end up being put on academic probation, where you have to go around and get each teacher to sign off saying that you are passing your classes, making sure that you maintain academic excellence along with playing your sport really well and doing what matters to you, trying to maintain friendships and all of that. You end up not having enough time or energy, and certainly not enough sleep to come through strong. Our coach that I've had all through my high school, Kathy Nelson, ended up resigning at the end of this year because of the toll on her family. She'd said that if it had been 4A still and she'd not have to travel so much, she would have still been coaching. But as it is, she was not putting her kids to bed at night, and that was taking a huge toll on her family, and she had to make the decision to either quit her family or quit her high school volleyball coaching. And she decided volleyball had to go, because obviously you wouldn't quit your family. And this has been, it's really hard for all the girls behind me who are my friends on the team, seeing them, crying. It was really hard seeing, how horrible that was, because who wants to see their coach who's awesome quit because of a realignment issue? For swimming, it wasn't as big of a problem. We ended up traveling on the weekends. So instead of having any weekends to do my major projects for school, I ended up traveling with swimming most of the time. With school, I'm doing a program which is IB, International Baccalaureate, which takes a lot of time. I have to write many extra papers beyond regular international high school papers. So this is writing at least one paper every 2 weeks, one major paper, along with the rest of my schoolwork, trying to find time between sports and traveling on buses that have either no light or low light situations where I cannot get my homework done, and coming to school unprepared the next day has been very hard. Thank you.
Thank you. I was going to ask you if you were an IB student, knowing that that work is extra hard, and you answered that question. I'm amazed. All right. You must be Kathy.
I'm Wendy.
You're Wendy. Sorry, you're not Kathy. Kathy comes after you. Okay,
yeah,
Wendy.
I'm Wendy Bryant. I'm a
senior at Sheldon High School, and I'm a member of IHS. And for me personally, when I first heard rumor of the redistricting and things like that in the spring of last year.
Can you put the microphone closer to you, dear? Thank you.
There you go. I decided to, as a senior, I had the ability to take a lighter course load. And so I did that so I was not missing classes like everybody else was. But at Sheldon, when you miss a class, and all the teachers tell you this on the first day of school, it's like missing two because of the way our school is arranged. And so when you miss a class, it is a huge burden to you and your schoolwork and your grades. And so I chose to not take college-level and AP classes that I could be taking because I knew that sports would be taking a toll on that. But freshmen and people like that don't have that opportunity, and they were missing multiple classes, and it was taking a huge toll on them. Just, it's hard to mentally stay prepared for your sport and then also know that you have the burden of school and grades in the back of your mind. And when we would travel, it was mentioned earlier, but with volleyball you have two games a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And some weeks we found ourselves traveling on both those days, but usually it was we just traveled on Thursdays. And but when you would travel, it would take a toll, not only because you're missing school on that day, but then the next day you are so drained from having to play your game and then ride the bus home and getting home so late and then having to wake up early the next day. You're just so drained that you cannot focus on anything. And then to top it off, at the end of the day, you have practice. And then, you know, you try and get ahead on your work and things like that, but it's just really hard to keep up with it. And then there's also the issue of the support and the crowds, and when you go to your long away games, you're lucky if some of the parents show up because they have to skip work to come. And it's just, it's not the same atmosphere that it used to be, and it's not as much fun because your only support is, when you're playing varsity, is the JV and the freshmen. Like, you become your own community and your own support, and it really takes a toll, and it's just not the way sports used to be for us. So that's what I have to say.
All right, thank you. And here's Zach.
Yeah. I'm a senior at South Eugene High School.
And state your name for us. This young lady over here takes down all the stuff.
I'm Zach Zozel. I'm a senior at South Eugene High School, and I do football, basketball, and track. My story is a lot like hers. Football season was pretty easy because we only played each team once, and it was good because we had better competition, but then basketball season was a lot harder because we played each team three times and we had to make seven trips down south, and it was, I definitely think it was really hard on our team. And just like they said, the crowds were a lot smaller this year. And I think if this had happened earlier, I probably would have cut one sport, maybe track. But I think that this is what's happening among, like, the younger kids at South. They're deciding to quit sports because of it.
I saw some photographs in our local newspaper that showed some of you sleeping on the floor of the bus. That didn't look very sanitary, and probably not very comfortable. But I'm sure it's like sleeping on an airplane. It's almost impossible to do, isn't it?
It's really hard to sleep on charter buses.
Yeah, even though they try to make it comfortable for you. All right. Well, and I'm sure, Wendy, your parents probably don't appreciate that you're not taking those AP classes.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's going to cost more for your college education.
I mean, I kind of regret it because it was an opportunity that I missed out on, but I know if I had taken them, I wouldn't have, like Heidi said, it was hard for her to stay ahead and not be put on probation, and I know that it would have been really hard for me, and it would have just been an extra burden and really distracting for me.
Great. All right. Thank you for coming. I appreciate it, and I appreciate that you're involved in sports and school. And go Irish. My kids are graduates of Sheldon. And, you know, you're okay, too. Axemen are all right, too. All right. Now we're going to have Kathy. Kathy Barnes, Joel DeVore, and who else have we got here? It looks like we have four. John Verstappen. So, Glenn, you're going to have to come up after these folks because we don't have enough space at the table. just start in?
All right.
I know you must be Kathy. You're the only female.
My name's Kathy Barnes, and I'm a parent of a son and a daughter who just finished their varsity basketball season at South Eugene High School.
Okay.
Because of the league redistricting, my kids have had to leave school about noon, leave class then, and they've missed three of their summer classes in the afternoon. But I know at Sheldon, because they are on a block schedule, they have two classes in the afternoon, and it's equivalent to a week's worth of classes. So when they miss one day of school, it's like missing a week of class time. I talked to a father who has a work schedule he can arrange so that he can travel to all of the away games. He told me that he traveled 1,383 miles to see his daughter play basketball. It cost him $198 in gas money, an additional $60 in food on the road, and an additional $60 that he gave to his daughter to cover food and other things while she was traveling with the team. Our family didn't have that expense, but I think there's some other costs we had that you can't really quantify. Because we had a son and a daughter both playing, with the redistricting, they had to reschedule. Like they mentioned earlier, both the boys and the girls played on the same night, but in opposite locations. So if we traveled south to see our son play, we'd be missing our daughter's games at home. So we never did that, had that expense, but we never got to see, we weren't able to see half of our kids' games, and they never got to see each other play. And I think that's a really high cost. It's important for us, it's fun for us as families to be there for the kids' games, and I think it's important for the kids to have us there. We missed out on that, and they missed out on supporting each other. And so we're urging you to support legislation that would keep the school districts together and also would set parameters for making decisions on redistricting that reflect our priorities as families and as students. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Barnes.
Madam Chair, I'm John Burstetta. I am a Sheldon parent and immediate past president of the Sheldon Boosters. I just want to add that I know our Sheldon Boosters has seen a substantial decrease in revenues this year due to the substantially less attendance at our ball games. We've been accustomed to having seven local schools within 15 minutes of each other, and we've had a lot of attendance from other schools at our place. Also with boys and girls playing on the same night, we don't have the same attendance at some of the winter sports like basketball that we'd had in the past. I just want to make two quick points. First, the OSAA is a fine organization, and as Senator Prozanski pointed out, it's a private organization. It is not subject to the public meeting laws. It operates privately. It meets in closed sessions, executive sessions. It deliberates privately. There are opportunities from time to time for public input, but nevertheless, the meetings are private, and the deliberations are private, and the decisions are made privately. Also, I'd like to make the point that although the OSAA does have a membership in its delegate assembly of 40 members, those members come from representatives of the leagues. There are seven leagues at the 6A level and six leagues at the 5A level. That's a total of 13 leagues. There are 13 representatives on the delegate assembly from the 6A and 5A schools. So that's less than one-third of the voting members on the delegate assembly are from 6A and 5A. The 6A and 5A schools represent over 70% of the students in the state of Oregon. And if you now include the 3A schools in that, there's 20 voting members of the 40, and those represent 90% of the students in the state of Oregon. So as you can see, the way the OSAA Delegate Assembly is set up, it's more like the U.S. Senate than it is the U.S. House of Representatives. It's not based on population or enrollment. That's not necessarily a bad system. However, it does, I think, give you insight into the way the OSA operates, and I think it's important, that much more important, for the state superintendent of schools or the state school board to have oversight over the reclassification process. In that regard, I'll add one more thing, and that is throughout the reclassification process, there was an opportunity to poll various interest groups on the reclassification proposals. Early on in the process, in April of 2005, the 4A athletic directors overwhelmingly supported a proposal that was other than the sixth class proposal, and it was one in which the leagues would remain together, but come playoff time, the smaller schools would go to one set of playoffs and the larger schools would go to another set of playoffs. Despite the overwhelming support of the athletic directors for that proposal, the reclassification committee decided to push ahead with the sixth class proposal anyway. And at that time, they announced out of the blue that Sheldon High School and South Eugene High School would be relocated to Southern Oregon. Subsequent to that, throughout the summer of 2005, the athletic directors in the 4A group spent a lot of time putting together a new proposal, which would be a football-only proposal. And at the end of that summer, the reclassification committee took a survey of all of the 4A interest groups, principals, athletic directors, and superintendents. And the result of that poll was that two-thirds of those polled at the 4A level supported the football-only plan. One-third supported the 6A, the six-class proposal. Nevertheless, the reclassification committee disregarded the poll and proceeded with the six-class proposal. And at the time that the delegate assembly eventually did vote, the only proposal in front of it was the six-class proposal. So I would say that it's important to have, once again, the state superintendent or the state school board to have oversight over the OSAA's actions due to its lack of true representation and as well as the fact that it meets secretly and privately. Thank you.
Mr. DeVore.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Joel DeVore. I also happen to be a parent of two graduates of South Eugene High School, and that's probably my most important job. It also happens, incidentally, I am the attorney for the Eugene School District. In that regard, we have shared with you the Dash 1 amendments, which we would suggest as a means of taking the best of the three proposals before you and combine them into one bill. And the most important thing about them may be what is paragraph 3 in the Dash 1 amendments, and it is to preserve the reform that Senator Metzger won in 2003 with Senate Bill 388 at that time. And that was the most important principle that he had persuaded the legislature to agree. And that was Senator Metzger's proposal that the OSAA must commit its rules to paper, and those rules must be approved or reviewed by the State Board of Education. And for that, we are very grateful to Senator Metzger. That is a paragraph in some of the later Senate bills before you that I believe inadvertently may be crossed out. And Senate Bill 217 does preserve Senator Metzger's paragraph 3 of what's now 339.430, and that's a very important principle that needs to be preserved. The only change that I see in Superintendent Castillo's bill, Senate 217, that she does, I would call it a clarification, where the current statute says that the State Board will review the OSAA rules. That proposal is to review and approve, and I think that's just an emphasis, but I think that's what the current law requires. So preserve Senator Metzger's reform from 2003 is the first important thing in the Dash 1 amendments. The second one, probably no less important, is in paragraph 4. And we would ask you, as public policy makers for the state of Oregon, not to micromanage, as Senator Cruz is concerned about, not to micromanage, but to declare the public policies of the state of Oregon by saying that the three priorities, or the top priorities when redistricting our schools in Oregon, should be, number one, to avoid the loss of class time, number two, to avoid the waste of money, and number three, to assure safety. Now, that ought not be controversial. That ought to be motherhood and apple pie. And that certainly does not rule out consideration of enrollment or any other common sense sort of considerations, which also could be committed to rule, as Senator Metzger has, its bill had requires to be done today and approved by the state board. But if you do not declare the top priorities for Oregon, they will be forgotten, as we have witnessed in this last go-round. Now, we're not here to talk with you today about the past history or the current controversy. We're looking forward to try to avoid this for the next time it happens. And that's, for the next time it happens, you should declare the public priorities, the top priorities, to be those three factors. Now, right along with that would be what would be paragraph 5 in the Dash 1 amendments. And this actually was a proposal that originated, I believe, with the state board or the state superintendent. But we think it's important to put it in state statute, and it's quite simply protect hometown schools together. That would be, hometown schools should not be split into separate leagues unless the local school board's consent. If you would put that into statute, you would then require that the OSA work cooperatively with the local school board when it needs or wants to split a hometown schools, as happened in Eugene with our four schools. And that's not hard. If Senator Westland comes, you know, from a Bend area, and you've got a large school and a new startup school that are very disparate in their enrollment, the local school board, of course, is going to give its consent, because it's not going to want to put its small school in the same league. It's not going to be a problem. But when you have schools in Eugene, where from the largest to the smallest is 474, and you can expand your scope to the 7 metropolitan schools that we have in Springfield and Bethel, it doesn't change. 474 is the largest spread from North Eugene to South Eugene High School. The average spread from largest to small in the new improved 6-class plan in the 6A district is 826. So if you want to split schools like Eugene that are already better than the ideal, better than the new and improved plan, talk to the local school board and get their consent. And if you can't get their consent, the answers are quite practical. The schools play up, as our schools requested to do, or they play down, or they play in a mixed league and during the regular season and they go off separately to the championships. There's lots of ways to do it, so it's entirely workable if you give local school boards some measure of control when this private organization proposes to split their schools. So that would be paragraph 5. Now, Mr. Verstata alluded to something that paragraph 6 addresses. 80% of OSAA is made up of public schools. They could not for a minute hold a closed-door session on the topic of redistricting under the public meetings law, but the OSAA does. To be sure, they hold public meetings to take input, and to be sure, at the end of the process, when they have one final plan to put up and vote on, those are public. But all of the discussions of the classification and districting committee, all of the discussions were closed to their own members, schools. Schools could not attend those sessions to see the nitty-gritty. No members of the public and no parents and no students could attend those meetings. Now, I don't propose to change the way that OSA would operate, and no one would. I mean, everyone is grateful for their work. But on the narrow topic of redistricting, there is no reason on earth that you could not put in statute that on the topic of redistricting, those meetings must be open to the member schools and to the public. And that's an easy change. Paragraph 7 would borrow from all three bills one common idea, and that is to strengthen the hand of the superintendent of public instruction. Before a plan is finally adopted, the state superintendent should give the approval for that plan and have the power to modify it, to tweak it, to adjust it consistent with the standards that are already adopted. And what you will do is preventative medicine. If your state superintendent has the power to look at a plan and say, you know what, we do need to make an adjustment here. You know, the process may have gone well for most schools, but we need to make an adjustment. Your state superintendent should have the power to approve or to modify that plan. And that, I commend you all and Senator Walker for looking for that proposal, and that's what paragraph 7 would do.
And Mr. DeVore, that would take care of the issue Senator Prozonsky raised about the constitutional issue.
That would. I believe it would. Because the ultimate decision rests with the public authority.
Mm-hmm.
And paragraph 10 of the amendments is a minor issue, but ever since 1987, anyone, parent, student, or school, has had a right to appeal to an administrative appeal. I'm not talking about courts. I'm just talking about a simple administrative appeal to the Department of Education. That's always existed in the statute, and that's what the current redistricting controversy is about. It's simply an administrative appeal that goes officially to the State Board of Ed, but it's been delegated to the superintendent, who's delegated to a hearings officer. That's always existed, and that should not change. But there has been proposed across this state by the OSAA, seriously, and it's been discussed among all the member conferences, whether OSAA should adopt an internal membership rule that would charge back a school that has the audacity to dispute a matter with the OSAA, charge back the legal fees that OSAA incurs in fighting a local school. Now, I don't know about court suits, and I don't attempt to address that, but paragraph 10 would simply add a provision to the existing administrative appeal, which currently leaves the cost, each side bears their own costs, and that should not change. And to protect the right of appeal against sort of the bullying tactics of imposing legal fees on a school that has the audacity to ask the Department of Education, would you look at this redistricting plan, please? To protect them from being bullied by the threat of attorney fees, you should simply add a sentence in there that simply says there will be no chargeback by a private organization of its legal fees for someone who feels aggrieved and needs to go to the Department of Education to have them look at the standards to see if they were applied. Because right now, OSA has drafted this as Membership Obligation Rule 3.3, Article 3.3, which they've not made public and have not been willing to disclose to us. They've tabled it until the legislature adjourns, when there'll be this picked up again in the workshop that OSA will have in the summer.
When the legislature adjourns?
Well, if you're like...
Well, we will adjourn, but I just find that interesting. They've tabled it until we adjourn. So
well, that's your
spin. Opinion.
Until
okay.
The summer workshop. And I'm assuming that
right.
Efficiency will be what it is and that much of this controversy will be behind us by that time. Anyway, it's a small matter, and I ought not talk about legal fees too much, except that is kind of a bullying tactic, and we need to protect the right to appeal. The more important thing, of course, are preserving Senator Metzger's reform, declaring the public policies of redistricting, keeping the hometown schools together, and strengthening the hand of the superintendent. Now, the effective date for your bill, we would urge, and all three bills propose an early date that would mean sunsetting the current four-year redistricting plan. And the Dash 1 amendments propose that once we've established public priorities and you've strengthened the hand of the superintendent, we should have a new plan to take effect by the September of 08-09 school year. And that allows a full year, plenty of time to make whatever adjustments might be in the current plan. In fact, the future plan might look a lot like the current six-class plan with the rough edges sanded off. It might not be a big radical change. It might just be a change that adjusts the places where slicing and dicing Oregon into more classes and districts has caused the most tension because of our disparate geography. So it might not be different. The effective date for your, and this would be the second step of the reform that Senator Metzger began in 2003, it ought to take effect by September of 08.
Okay. So some of these, Mr. DeBoer, some of these issues that you're raising are really good government issues for how this organization governs itself and don't necessarily impact the redistricting that's been put upon you now. They're just something they should be doing.
Exactly.
Like the open meetings issue.
Exactly.
Okay, Senator Metzger, I knew he'd have a question since he was deeply involved in this in 2003.
It's like deja vu all over again.
Yeah.
Except not everybody on the one side is on the same side this time. Mr. DeBoer, first of all, I appreciate your amendment. I think you've done really good work in the Dash 1. I had one question for you. Just give me your thinking process on this one. You retain in the Dash 1 the ultimate authority of the superintendent, which is an elected position as one individual, as opposed to the other option, which would be the seven-member Board of Education, which is a little broader base, a little less subject to the political location of the superintendent at any given time. I'm just curious as to what your thought is on having the superintendent versus the board have that responsibility.
Well, this really changes neither. The state board would still be there as the appeal body to which you would go at the end of the process if you as a school feel aggrieved that the standards were ignored and you really needed to call people's attention to what are the approved public policies. So that, and right now the current statute says that the appeals go to the State Board of Education. So the State Board would be the administrative hearing official that would do that. Mm-hmm. But the paragraph 7, which borrows from all three bills, would involve the State Superintendent of Public Instruction at an earlier step in the process. So if you can follow me conceptually, the idea is before a plan is implemented, and in effect like now where our students are already living with it and we still have an appeal going on, which has now gone on to the courts, before we get that far down the road, the state superintendent, not the board, but the state superintendent has the opportunity to review a plan before it goes into effect and make a modification. That still leaves open the possibility that someone might disagree with the state superintendent. They still have their right of appeal, as most people do in other avenues of life. You know, the administrative official makes an initial decision, but you might appeal, you know, the building permit denial to the zoning variance board or whatever. So you can still go to the Board of Education if you really think that something is amiss that didn't get fixed. So there's actually two, a right of an appeal, which has a different standard of review,
right,
than when the state superintendent is saying, I'm here as the ultimate decision maker. It's a different role.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Great. Thank you, Mr. DeVore. That, all of you did a great job with the presentation. I appreciate you explaining the Dash 1 amendment, which pretty much takes care of the three bills and merges them together in a way that sounds a bit more reasonable. There's a couple more people I need to hear from, so I'll ask you all to step back and thank you for coming. The superintendent is here. Susan, I'm going to hear from you after I hear from two more people. Glenn Campbell, you are, if you will come up, and then Sue Casey, you probably don't know each other, but you will now. And those are the last two I see that are in support of this. So come on up. Hi, you must be Miss Casey then.
Carrie.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, Carrie. Yeah. I can't see, I can't read, I can't hear, I can't think. My head's so full of cold. So, Sue Carrie, tell us where you're from.
I'm from Eugene. My daughter is a junior at South Eugene High School. I'm the treasurer of the soccer club there. My daughter's been playing multiple sports since she was in kindergarten. And I don't know very much about the mechanics of this, but what I wanted to bring to issue here is what is the emphasis and how do we provide resources and opportunities for our young people to develop into healthy future citizens. And so mine is more of a broad perspective and how this affects the holistic growth of our young people. I question what, you know, on one extreme, how much is competition at issue here and how important is that really? Is that more important than having as many of our young people involved in athletics for physical fitness? On the other hand, looking at the paradigm of neighborhood schools for the opportunity of sports and physical fitness to the other extreme, which I don't imply is in operation here, but I think our society is there is a star I'd like us to think more in the middle of making athletics more about fitness than competition. I'm concerned that athletics could go in the direction that art has gone. Taught art in the schools as a volunteer dozens and dozens of hours because art has been left out. It's been chipped away at, and I'm concerned that athletics is going to go in the same direction. Our soccer teams have gone in the girls' side from four teams to three teams, and so there's fewer opportunities as a result of this situation for girls to be playing soccer. And taken to an extreme, how does that affect the health of our kids if they don't have opportunities to play sports? I've had an opinion about holistic education, that if it's like proteins, if you limit one protein to a certain degree, all of the other proteins are limited to that same percentage. And I feel like if we're doing that with art, with music, and now athletics, how are we able to grow healthy, whole, complete citizens?
Thank you. I appreciate that. I don't mean to cut you off for work.
Okay.
We got to hear from some other folks and let everybody have a say. I appreciate you came up. Mr. Campbell, it's a pleasure to finally meet you.
Yeah, I hope you're feeling better. I'm still suffering from
you're
the same
You're still suffering
cold.
As well.
He's giving it to everybody in the committee.
No.
I know I haven't. So.
Started with Senator Morse. Then it started with Senator Westland, then Morse, then Cruz, then me, and now Metzger's.
We share.
All right. What have you got for us?
My name's Glenn Campbell. I'm from Eugene. I'm a parent of two students who have graduated from Sheldon and one who's currently a freshman at Sheldon. I wanted to touch on two things today. One is the issue of costs. I know people have talked about increased cost and kind of the abstract, and I started asking questions a few months ago to try to quantify that, and I've worked with the athletic director at Sheldon High School, and I put together an Excel spreadsheet where you list out all the sports, how many teams, how many participating athletes, look at bus costs, drivers, gas, all that kind of thing. Look at having to hire substitute teachers to cover empty classrooms where coaches have had to leave early. And really tried to, you know, pencil it out. And it pencils out for Sheldon at $58,000 a year. And this is just an increased cost because of the recent reclassification. I think it's a reasonable assumption to say that South Eugene shares those same costs. So that's $116,000 per year just for these two schools in Eugene. Over the four-year life of the plan, that adds up to $467,000. So I wanted to quantify that for the committee. There's not enough bake sales in Eugene going on to raise that kind of cash to cover that. So I think it's obvious where that money's coming from. It's coming out of our schools.
And Mr. Campbell, I forgot to ask the Booster Club parent earlier, but excuse me, what does the Booster Club provide? They raise money to pay for
the
some
other
activities, correct?
Part that I looked at that I haven't been able to get as firm numbers on, so I wasn't going to speak to them specifically, is this issue of lost gate receipts. Nobody, to my mind, has put together a firm estimate of that. I know that there's people at South Eugene who have estimated that at roughly $50,000 a year. I think when this school year's over, we might have a better handle on what that actually looks like. But again, if you assume Sheldon and South share that roughly equivalent, both schools in Eugene under the same situation, that's $100,000 a year for the two schools combined over the four-year life of the plan. That's another $400,000 in lost income that could be helping our schools, I'm sure, our school district in some fashion.
And they're using that money they raise in the Booster Club to help support the programs, correct?
I'm not that intimately familiar
with
how
someone just raised their hand. Yeah, someone raised their hand and indicated I was correct in that. All right, great.
So the other point I wanted to touch on is really simple, and that is that academics are more important than sports, and I just feel like somebody needs to stand up and say that. In this latest reclassification, there was a decision to be made about what to do with Sheldon and South Eugene. And to me, it was a fairly simple decision. There was two choices to be made. Keep them in Eugene in the metropolitan area, competing against schools they've competed against for 40 years, or send them off to Medford, 175 miles away, with all of the costs and impacts that we've heard today that would come with that. And to me, that's a no-brainer decision. Academics are more important than sports. We should keep Sheldon and South Eugene in the Eugene area, Eugene-Springfield area. And the OSA decided otherwise. They came down on the wrong side of that issue. I think the issue there is that they're a sports organization, so of course sports competition is their highest priority, and I think they'll state that publicly. They have before. I'm guessing they will again here today. I just think it's inappropriate. The decision-making around that, the authority needs to rest with states, the superintendent of public instruction, somebody who has academics as their highest priority and a broad view of our children's overall education, not just their sports competition. So I think it's critical that part of the legislation gets passed.
Well, thank you, and that's a great segue because we're going to hear from the superintendent next. Thank you both.
Question,
for
Madam Chair.
Question before you leave. Yes.
The $58,000 increase. That's a $58,000 over how much? How much is it? You're from South Sheldon.
I'm from Sheldon. I'm a parent from Sheldon.
And Sheldon spends how much on athletics?
I don't know how much they spend overall. I work with the athletic director just to try to get a handle on what are the increased costs because of the extra travel they're having to do. And just the increase came up to $58,000. That's the only number I have to report today. I don't know their overall athletic budget.
The testimony I've heard with the very involved athletic programs, I think they spend a considerable amount of money on athletics. And so it's just interesting what the percent increase would have been.
Didn't have that, sorry.
All right. Thank you both. Superintendent Castillo and Steve Bogart from the State Board of Ed, if you could both come up. And I'm going to let you go until 9:30-ish, and then we'll start hearing from the other side. Sure, you only have 45 minutes.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, good morning. I'm Susan Castillo, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction for the State of Oregon. I'm here today, I know you're looking at three bills. I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 217, which would create new provisions to statute and improve the way in which Oregon School Activities Association handles classification and redistricting decisions. And it's my belief that these new provisions to improve school activities, especially athletics, that the changes will result in more student success where it counts most, and that's in the classroom. I just want to begin by saying that I think we all need to remember as we're looking at this issue that OSAA is not this, this odd organization without a face. It has the face of 290 member schools that voluntarily belong to this organization. And it's my firm belief that all of those members of that organization are really trying to do the right thing for all kids. And I believe everybody in this room focused on this issue is really trying to get to a good solution for all kids in our state, whatever their perspective is. So having said that, I will say that when the OSAA overhauled the athletics landscape in October of 2005, expanding the number of leagues from 4 to 6, it did create some unintended effects, and the shakeup created by that change had wide-ranging effects, and some were good and some were not so good, depending on where you live in the state of Oregon. On the positive side, OSAA did achieve a much more competitively balanced alignment between large and smaller schools. Six classifications have meant more schools involved in state playoffs, and I've heard from 5A and smaller schools that because of the improved competitive balance, participation in athletics is up, and that attendance at school athletics events and school spirit has improved. So I think that when you look at this from a statewide perspective, as I do as the state superintendent, redistricting on the whole has been a success. On the other hand, three of the state's largest school districts, Salem, Eugene, and Medford, filed an appeal in November of 2005, and their issues were serious issues. They spoke of lost instructional time, unnecessary and dangerous travel, and increased costs and lost revenue. And there are serious concerns, and their appeal, as you know, went to the State Board of Education and then to me as the state superintendent. Now, people have asked, Susan, why are you so involved with OSAA? Well, I became involved when the State Board handed the appeal part of the process to me. And in that process, I became frustrated to learn that I had limited authority in the overall decision. I was being held accountable by unhappy parents and newspaper editors about the decision. My first choice would always be to have OSAA resolve any conflict on its own. I don't need to run the athletic program for the state. My job is not the state athletic director. I just want it to work well for all kids in the state. But when that's not possible, the superintendent and the state board need to be given more authority and flexibility to act. Here's a perfect illustration of what I'm talking about. In May 2006, as part of the appeal process, I asked the parties to attend and participate in a series of mediations to try to settle the issues. I couldn't order the mediation. I could only request. They did go into mediation, but I couldn't hold them there and say nobody leaves the table until we have a compromise. I could only make the suggestion and hope for the best. And I think that we need to take a look at that. So in June, I ordered that the six classifications go forward and that OSAA had acted within the law and within the bounds of their constitution and rules. It was a very narrow ruling. Then immediately, of course, all three school districts filed for judicial review in the Oregon Court of Appeals, as you know, and legal bills for all parties have run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the case runs hundreds of pages of legal arguments on both sides. For something that is described as so successful, it sure has become a mess. And that brings us to where we are today. Salem, Eugene, and Medford are not the only ones who would like to see changes made. I have this bill before the committee. Chair Walker, you have a bill. Senator Przanski has a bill. The state board is working on modifications to the rules which would directly affect OSAA's constitution and bylaws. So it's clear that there is merit to the concerns about student safety, unnecessary and dangerous travel, lost instructional time, and increased cost. And I believe those concerns and their immediate impact on students do require us to act. And I also think that we can make changes that will improve the process and lead to a better outcome for everybody involved. Senate Bill 217 makes a couple of changes to the way things work today. First, the bill does direct the state board to adopt a rule to require that placement of schools in interscholastic activity districts follow a prioritized criteria. Minimize the impact on the academic schedules of students, would minimize the fiscal impact on school districts, and maximize safe transportation for students to participate. And second, the bill directs that any plan for placement of schools into interscholastic activity be submitted to the Superintendent of Public Instruction for approval or modification. And I believe these changes are necessary and will be an improvement to the system as it is today. And I guess I'll just end my testimony there and be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. I think I'm going to hear from the state board and get your perspective as it ties in with the superintendent, and then we'll ask you both some questions.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Steve Bogart. I'm a member of the State Board of Education, and I reside in Baker City, Oregon. So when we talk about travel, I certainly am aware of the cost and the imposition of time and effort. I want to make clear to the committee that the board has not taken any position on any of these bills. We customarily don't. We try to execute the direction of the legislature and create policy, positive policy, education policy for the state.
Well, it's an easy position to be in that neutral position, isn't it?
Well, the board has taken those positions there, and I think it'll get to Senator Metzger's point in the discussion. We all have our individual perspectives and thoughts on actually most, if not all, education issues.
Okay.
My purpose is primarily to inform the committee of the work of the state board. And the second is I'll take liberty, if you allow me, to offer some personal perspective and hopefully be able to put some context around these some of these issues. The State Board, as you're well aware, reviews the rules and bylaws of all of a number of interscholastic activities organizations every 4 years. There are a number of groups in addition to OSAA that the board does have a role in approval so they can operate within the school system. Last year, the board gave a one-year approval to OSAA, especially in light of the increased scrutiny and the questions that arose. We delegated the hearings process, as we have in a number of instances. I do feel sorry for the superintendent. Susan gets to deal with all the challenges that come before us, whether it be OSAA and yeah, classification change or charter school appeals, and I think the list is endless, that the board has responsibility and has delegated those responsibilities.
You've punted them?
Pardon?
You've punted your responsibilities to the superintendent?
Actually, quite often, Susan's been remarkable in shouldering those challenges. We did it as much from a timing standpoint as anything. We meet approximately once a month, and to be able to get decisions in a timely fashion, sometimes that isn't quick enough.
Okay.
The board has raised the level of scrutiny with the classification system and the appeals of the districting as a result of this. Last summer during our retreat, the board established a subcommittee, of which I'm a member, to review and take a closer look at the approval process and the criteria under which we come to our decision on approval or lack of approval. We have worked, and as the superintendent mentioned, the rules are currently out for comment, and the board is scheduled to take action on those later this spring. So we have actually, we've made a devout effort to uphold our end of the our responsibility to get those rules, so there's a common understanding prior to the end of the school year, so next year there won't be any question as to classifications, assignment of different roles. Now, on a personal note and my observations, I do share the superintendent's observations. OSAA is a volunteer organization and has done a remarkable job for a long time providing learning opportunities in challenging environments for our students. And from a statewide perspective, the sixth classification system has proved to be a success. We've heard that anecdotally, and I believe that there probably is some data to substantiate its level of participation and involvement. And I also share Susan's thought that our first choice certainly would be to have OSAA be able to resolve its conflicts and not come to us. A couple personal observations in addition. I really need to stress, and I'm sure that the committee is well aware, that OSAA is a volunteer organization and is independent from a lot of the government rules, restrictions, and certainly parameters of operation. It is a voluntary membership organization, which means that anyone can opt out at any time, and its members are not compensated. So they're doing this because of their interest in the activities of students and to create a positive environment. That status saves the state, specifically the Department of Education, and probably the Judicial Department, significant cost, liability, and administrative challenges. It relates to notice and audits and distractions from the primary responsibilities of the academics of the student. And that's, I guess my plea is to please keep that in mind in your considerations. Thank you for the opportunity. I am here and also able to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Bogart. I don't think anyone here wants to do away with the OSAA. That would not be on my plate because they do perform a function that is necessary. However, there are issues concerning the way it's run and the rules that they live by. Now, that being said, Senator Superintendent Castillo just testified that her bill would direct the state board to adopt a rule to require that placement of schools
in interscholastic activity districts follow prioritized criteria. Do we need a bill to tell you to do that, or are you? Can you do that at her direction?
Actually, we do that as a result of prior legislation, and how well and in what order, that's the reason for the change in the administrative rule. Certainly there's not a problem with having someone else ask. We already take that charge as part of our responsibility.
And do you agree with the superintendent that she had no ability to hold people to the table and say, get this worked out?
I believe the options are very limited,
limited.
Had any options whatsoever.
All right. I wouldn't want to be in your shoes. Question of Senator Moore's.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With your anticipated rule change, would the superintendent's role change to where she would have greater involvement and authority, so to speak?
No, the rule would not change the role of the superintendent.
I think that comes from us. Isn't that correct? Ms. Castillo, you can't sua sponte decide that you have more of a role here. You need guidance from the legislature, correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do. And if I could just, when I issued the ruling, I had said that I would file a bill to address some of the issues that I was concerned about. But I also knew that our state board also has the authority through their rulemaking authority. We don't need to have legislation to make changes to what is going to happen as we move forward. And I knew that the board, was very engaged in this latest issue, and they had some concerns, and I knew that they were also going to be working on it, and they are. They're in the middle of their work and have not arrived at their final decisions on how they're going to proceed. So I know that they are looking at all of these issues very closely and having some really good discussions, and they've held hearings and heard input on where they, their latest proposal is now. And it has not gone to the full board, so it's still... in the works. Because as I look at the current situation in the legislature, for most districts in the state, this plan is working fine. It's that top level, the 6A leagues, where we have the concerns. So probably for most of your colleagues in the legislature, they don't see a need for a change in how it's currently working. So I don't know what how this is all going to play out this legislative session in terms
of legislative
support for any of these bills. But I just am following through on what I said I would do as a result of the concerns that were raised to me in my role as state superintendent. And then I also continue to work with the board members. We work very closely on issues and have a great working relationship. And we'll continue to work together on this issue as well in the rulemaking part of this. So.
Well, I was just handed a note that the board is somewhat toothless. I won't say who said that, but recently there was some feeling that you gutted your own redistricting proposal and it wasn't exactly what we were expecting to come out of the board. Can you respond to that?
Actually, there have been modifications as a result of the hearing and work sessions on the part of the subcommittee. There have been some modifications. The characterization, again, I don't know what information you have, but there have been modifications to the rule.
All right. Thank you. Okay. A quick question because I've got to get to the opponent.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. First, a comment and then a question. I find it puzzling that traveling on I-5 has suddenly become dangerous, but because I do it all the time, and it's dangerous when I'm on the road, but I don't think when anybody else is. But I guess part of the question, because I went to school at Roseburg in 6A, and 4A, whatever it was. Anyway,
I
went to school in Roseburg, and what we did was we had games on Friday and Saturday nights, and one would be a travel day and one would not be, and so the impact on actual student days was minimal. And so I'm wondering why we're doing Tuesday, Thursday. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, I think you raise a very important question that needs to be addressed. It's an issue that I've started talking about, and I think that we do need to take a look at why we're having kids travel during the middle of the week, and why that we should make a greater effort to keep that travel to the weekend rather than the middle of the week, because we do hear these stories where kids get back late at night and the next day have either a test early in the morning or early morning class, and that does raise concerns about what impact it has on academics. And I know that, you know, for some people who have been doing it for a long, long time, they're saying, well, that's just how it is, and that's what we do. But I think we do need to take a look at that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I mean, that's Friday, Saturday was the way it was done in Southern Oregon Conference forever. We did have travel issues back then. And
that was
and
back in the Pleistocene era?
That was back before electricity, but still, but still it made a lot of sense. And you were traveling one time each week, you know, like for basketball or something like that. So,
right.
I mean, it was manageable.
Okay. Senator Metzger has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to your point about the board, and I just think it is important for the record as in terms of how we discuss what we do legislatively or not. Because Senate Bill 388, which is the bill we've been talking about, even in the A.M. Gross version that was enrolled and is now law, and as you know, we had the conversations before the board that when I came to speak to you a couple years ago about this, is that the board does have the authority now. Because the OSAA must submit the criteria, you must approve it, and if you don't like it, as in our discussion was, it is incumbent upon the board under that legislation to send that message to the voluntary organization and say, if we want these criteria, we want these 1, 2, and 3, you do have that authority now. Now, the question that the legislature would have was, if we don't think that's being exercised, that responsibility, we can be very specific about it. Back in 03, the decision was that, you know, well, we could handle that. And I think what we have to decide is whether we're handling that well or not. But it is under your purview now if you don't like the criteria or how they're organized or the authority of those criteria are given in certain circumstances, you must approve that. Is that not correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, that is correct. And in fact, the revisions to the administrative rule and the application process will be amended to better reflect the provisions of Senate Bill
388.
388. Yeah. Okay, great. That was a great question and a great segue into where we're going next. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you.
We're going to hear from the opponents now. We have extended our committee to about 25 after. If colleagues on the committee have other obligations, they may leave at the appointed time at 10:15, but there is no committee coming in after us, so we will stay 10 minutes late. And where is my list of who's the first panel? They're coming up, so that's going to help me. Okay, hi, Mr. Rossler. Okay, so if we can just start in and get moving along here. Just take your pick. Choose or I'll choose. Mr. Rossler, do you want to go first or someone else?
I'm going to turn that over to the president of OSAA, John Laley.
Okay.
Madam Chair and honorable senators, my name is John Laley, superintendent of the Sutherland Schools, which is down I-5. And I have the pleasure of being the president this year, and it is a pleasure, even with some of the issues that we're dealing with. I think, not to be too repetitive, but I do want to remind you again, this is an organization that is made up of 290 schools. And the organization serves those schools at the desire of the schools, if you will. And that's public and private schools. The schools regulate and govern themselves. And as evidence of that, I think it's important to also note that as worthy as the concerns are about loss of school time or concerns over safety and travel and economic cost, we still allow our schools, even though they've been placed in leagues, the opportunity to make their own decisions relative to non-league scheduling. That is why you see some of the schools, even the same schools that are involved in questioning this decision, traveling to Washington for some of their events, traveling to Nevada for some of their events, traveling to California, or even flying to Missouri for some opportunities to compete with other people. And I think that's important because we've allowed the schools to make their own decisions on those non-league opportunities. The schools choose to govern themselves, and the organization serves those schools. That's extremely important. In terms of that governance, you do have, and I know somebody's looking at the two of them, you have provided to you, number one, evidence, which is the delegate assembly. It represents 38 votes, which is one from each league. And granted, that's not one per school, but each league with the schools encompassed in that league are allowed to select a person who represents them to that assembly. In addition to that, we've also, what we think, in trying to be responsible and responding to the needs of the entire organizational structure, we have a member from Oregon School Boards, we have a member from the Athletic Directors Association, we have a member from Activities Group, we have a member from the coaches, and a member from the officials who also serve on that group. And I want to underscore one more time, we are an organization for activities, not just sports. And although we get caught up because sports seems to drive things and grabs the newspaper, we do serve for speech and debate. We serve for music. We serve those opportunities as well. In addition, you have a second page which also notes the executive board. And this group is selected by the delegate assembly to represent them in the operational functions, if you will. We're opposed to the bills that are presented because we think that we work well, that we function well, that we do have guidelines in place that allow us to govern and meet the needs of the school districts and the schools who have asked us to represent them. And although we can always look for improvement and change, sometimes it bothers people. Change is healthy. We do think that we've responded to changes as they have come up. So we're not convinced that the bills really serve any change need that makes it better for the organizational structure. That's why we're opposed to the bills, and we'll continue to speak to that. At this time, I would now defer to Mr. Rossler.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Craig Rosser, Vice President of OSAA and Superintendent of Silver Falls School District in Silverton. As Senator Metzger pointed out, there's already the authority under ORS 339.430 for the state board really to dictate to OSAA the standards under which it makes its classification districting decisions. I don't think Senate Bill 217, 382, and 522 are necessary. It's already in statute. We also oppose this legislation, as Mr. Laley pointed out. We have a 290 member schools that we represent. The schools make the decision, not the OSAA staff. It's the schools that make the decisions. This is a decision that was not popular with some schools, but was highly popular with most of the schools in the state of Oregon. As far as turning ultimate authority over to the state superintendent of public schools, I would have to question whether Eugene would be here if the state superintendent of public schools was from Madras, Oregon, was from Dallas, Oregon. Dallas, Oregon was a 4A school, so small and so uncompetitive that they had to play an independent schedule, which forbid them from participating in any sort of championship activities. I just don't believe that we should be turning this decision over to a single individual who may have biases based upon their geographic location.
I would submit to you, Mr. Rossler, that the citizens of Eugene probably don't feel that the superintendent exercised those biases in the decision that she made to support the reclassification.
Right.
So I think she can hold herself above the fact that she's from Eugene.
My point was not to point out particularly Mrs. Castillo. It was to say that when you have someone who has a single position, depending upon their geographic location and the pressure they feel depending on where they live geographically, can influence the outcome. And I don't think we want to replace having 290 member schools and a governance committee that they have in place and over a year-long process with the decision of a single individual. As was mentioned by the state board member, The State Board is already looking at modifying and adopting the OARs to clarify classification and districting criteria. And we've had several meetings with the staff of OSAA and subcommittee members from the State Board to look at changes we can make in the current OARs that I think would address some of the concerns that have been raised. And paper number three in your packet is a draft of some of those proposed changes the State Board subcommittee is now taking a look at. Regarding Senate Bill 217 and 382 and the prioritization issue, I think there why it's well-intentioned effort to prioritize, and on the surface, talking about making student safety, loss of class time, and cost are top priorities, I think the devil's in the details. And let me step you back to the early 1990s. I was attending a classification districting committee meeting put on by OSAA, which was open, and there were many people there. And I happened to be there because Silverton was growing in population, and we were moving from 3A to 4A, and I was trying to influence OSAA to create a new league, and we ultimately did create a new league. At that very same meeting, there was a very large contingent of parents from the Sherwood School District, and they were very much opposed to Madras School District being placed in their league, and they spoke very vociferously and with lots of passion. And as you listen to them talk about their concerns about their kids missing class time, about their kids going across the mountains, who couldn't empathize with their position and understand their position? Then Madras had two representatives at the meeting, and they brought to the attention of the committee and to the Sherwood parents something that still sticks in my memory. And they said, if you were to imagine Madras being in Portland, and you were to think about the distance we had to travel, our closest game would end up being just south of Seattle if you left us in a league in eastern Oregon. And our farthest game would take us over the border into California on our way to Redding. Now, for those of us who live along I-5, we just don't get it about the distance that people in central and eastern Oregon have to travel. Madras was begging to come over the mountain for every game to enter into a league with Sherwood and Estacada. The parents from Sherwood and Estacada didn't understand that. And from their point of view, I understand why they would object to their students being placed in that league. When you talk about prioritization, and if that had been an issue that had to be addressed at that point in time, it would depend on one's perspective. If you're a Sherwood parent, certainly placing us in a league with Madras would not be addressing class time, would not be addressing cost. If you're a Madras parent, not putting us in a league with Sherwood and Estacada would not be addressing the issue of cost and loss of class time. So why it's a well-intentioned, I think, effort on your part to try and prioritize those issues, I think, again, the devil's in the details, and the difficulty is depending on where you happen to live and whether or not that particular prioritization plan would work. And I think that if it becomes something that's placed in statute, we're going to see a never-ending series of litigation depending upon who's impacted and how they're impacted, whether or not they felt like the issue of prioritization was addressed or not addressed.
Okay, and we'll hear from your legal counsel next about that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Don Carter. I'm an attorney for the Oregon School Activities Association, and my practice is in Portland. I come here today to address the issue that Senator Prezonsky raised with his bill, and that is it impermissible to delegate authority to a private organization to administer interscholastic activities? And I respectfully disagree with the position that he takes, and I've submitted a legal memorandum under tab 5 in the materials that you have before you that outlines what I believe are the pertinent considerations in determining when a delegation is permissible and when it is not. And the question is whether the procedure established for the exercise of the power furnishes adequate safeguards to those affected by the exercise of power. So the question is, what safeguards are there in connection with the exercise of the power delegated. And the case law in Oregon is significant. There are a number of Oregon Supreme Court and Court of Appeals cases that have discussed this. There is an Attorney General's opinion that I have cited here from 2000 in which it was permissible for a public charter school to contract out its operations to a private for-profit entity, provided that these safeguards are met. And Madam Chair mentioned the Stout decision. That was a case before the Court of Appeals in which the Attorney General in that particular case did argue that there was an impermissible delegation. The Oregon Court of Appeals didn't squarely face the issue, kind of addressed it and dismissed it and moved on. I would like to point out, however, that if Senator Przanski's position were to be adopted by the Oregon Court of Appeals, it would be impermissible for Oregon State University or University of Oregon to be members of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. That's a private organization that governs interscholastic, intercollegiate activities. It would be impermissible for those schools to be members of the Pacific Ten Conference, which is a private organization. So I think that I must respectfully disagree. I think that the case law is clear that OSAA and similar organizations, the Future Farmers of America, the Oregon Rodeo Association, all of those organizations are proper institutions to administer interscholastic activities. I'd like to just address one other point that was raised in connection with the bill, and that is this whole question of legal fees. I'd like to just say that matters that are of concern to the members of the Oregon School Activities Association may be raised by those members. Four member schools can bring any proposal they want to before the association. They can vote on it. In fact, a number of other states around the country and all 50 states and the District of Columbia have organizations similar to the Oregon School Activities Association. A number of those states have adopted a policy that says if a member school objects to an action taken by the member by the membership association and they are unsuccessful in that litigation, that they should bear the cost of the attorney fees for both parties. That question was floated at a summer workshop. No proposal has been made. That is not a question that has been presented for decision by the Delegate Assembly or the Executive Board of the Oregon School Activities Association. I think that's a phantom issue for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you address the other issue that was raised about making the decisions on redistricting issues in private without having a public meeting or recordation of the minutes?
The Oregon School Activities Association is a private association and is not bound by the public meetings law. And the way that it actually operates, Madam Chair, is that in connection with redistricting, there's a large redistricting committee appointed from all sectors of the state that meets to hear public testimony. And then they hold work sessions in private. So after they've heard the public testimony, they go into private session to discuss what they've heard and what they ought to do about it. The very next day, minutes are posted on the Oregon School Activities Association website of what the discussions were and what decisions might have been made. The final decision about what districting and classification decisions should be made is made by the Delegate Assembly in public session. In 2005, the Delegate Assembly met in public session, heard testimony from members of the public, and voted in a public session. So the only hearings that were held in private were the work sessions following the public meetings of the redistricting committee, not even the Delegate Assembly. So we have engaged in discussions with the Board of Education about whether that's a bad thing or a good thing. And we've had internal discussions about does that create concerns about backroom deals or does it permit a wider ranging discussion? And it's a matter that has been widely discussed and considered. And the member schools at this point have said we think that it's appropriate to continue this way. The executive director of the Oregon School Activities Association has said to me that no member school has ever said, we want to attend a work session and been turned away. So this has not been an issue until this classification and redistricting committee and the decision came out the way that it did.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? All right, thank you. I was disappointed to see that our Constitution has a misspelled word in it.
Yes.
The word separate.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, next up we have, if I can find my list, Randy Shield, hopefully I did that correctly, Krista Parent, and Scott Chambers. And we have about 25 minutes. And a lot more people to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure.
I'm Randy Shield. I'm superintendent of Tillamook School District 9, and I was also the chair of the Classification and Districting Committee that I guess got us here. I'm nervous sitting in front of you, not today because of you, but because I'm sitting next to the superintendent of the year, national superintendent of the year, Krista Parent. She makes me nervous.
I think that is tremendous. And you are from South Lane School District.
Correct.
So I'm honored that you're here in front of us today.
Thank you very much.
Our committee was put together as representative, just like the executive board is with the OSAA, with balanced representation across the state. You can see in your handouts, handout number 6, the actual people that were involved in this. On there, you'll see that there's big schools and small schools represented, urban and rural. Superintendents, principals, ADs, parents, coaches, school board members, the whole realm. Our charge as a committee was to hold public hearings and provide correspondence and for the classification and districting process, to hear testimony from schools and interested parties, and to make recommendations to the executive board. We're asked by the executive board to report on the feasibility and advisability of modifying the number of districts in each classification, adjusting cutoffs, classification cutoffs, implementing a multiplier for private school ADM, and creating a fifth classification in selected or in all activities. So that's kind of what they threw out to start the process. We started meeting in September of 2004, and our meetings lasted until September of 2005. 13 months, 11 meetings, official meetings, and thousands of conversations between each of those meetings, as you can understand. The formats of our meeting are somewhat similar to what you have here. People signed up for public testimony. They were given the opportunity to submit written testimony as well. Other people submitted written testimony. Everyone who wanted an opportunity to speak had that opportunity to speak either in voice or written over the course of the process. And we went through that until everybody was done giving their input, and then we went into a work session and had discussions about the information that came to us. Things that were considered, it wasn't just a six classification system. That's not where we started at all. Had no idea. But we dealt with things like private school multipliers, five classifications, looked at football-only classifications, five classifications in all sports, reducing the number of leagues in each classification were possibilities, ADM cutoffs. We talked about other ways besides just student population to decide what could help us create a better system. We dealt with all of those things, and in each case, when we came down to it, we sent out proposals or options for people to look at. In most cases, we're hoping for feedback, and we got that. We dealt with numerous different items, ideas, thoughts. People brought other proposals forward. Out of the entire state, they came forward with thoughts and ideas as to how to deal with this system, how to deal with reclassification. Based on the input we received from these hundreds of correspondents, three criteria kind of surfaced that people wanted to have addressed: competitive balance, minimizing travel time and the expense that goes along with it, and maintaining existing league structures where possible. These were the three things that kept rising to the top. Those were solidified when we went to the athletic directors conference that had all the ADs in the state there, and we asked for a hand vote and said, look, who believes this is the most important thing that we have to address at this point based on where we are? And again, those three criteria became the ones that people really said, you know, you have to look at this because these are the issues that we're having at this point. In May of 2005, our committee made a recommendation. By unanimous decision within the committee, we recommended to the board a 6 classification system in all sports. Now, as you know, that caused some feedback and some controversy. Some media was not terribly nice to us at times. And ultimately, the executive board pulled the committee back together and said, now let's relook at this. Let's make sure this is what you want to do. And so in June, we met with the executive board and also with some 4A athletic directors in Seaside. And they said, give us a summer to work on this and see if we can come up with a better plan that the 4A is happy with, because everybody else seemed to be pretty happy with the whole situation. And so over the summer, they met, worked, came back to us on August 22nd, and the athletic director said, look, this is what our plan is, but now we understand what you went through. Because it was by no means a unanimous plan. It was by no means, although there would have been a majority of 4A that supported it, the group that didn't support the plan that the ADs came forward with, and that was a merge system, 5A, 6A, and then separate for the playoffs, the group of schools that really were in opposition to that plan were in opposition because they were like the Dallas that Craig talked about. They were the ones that were taking it bad every week, and to keep going that direction through league play and separating the playoffs just wasn't solving the issue that was in front of them and in front of so many of us. And so ultimately, the committee continued their conversations and came to a point, after hours of discussion and a year's worth of meetings, 300 written documents came to us, over 100 testimonies we sat in front of, listened to, and, you know, we dealt with the media, we dealt with all those other things that came out. The committee, for the second time, came to a unanimous decision for a 6 classification system that takes into account the current league structures that teams were in. The Classification Districting Committee made a recommendation to the Executive Board, who unanimously approved that recommendation. From there, it went to the Delegate Assembly. The Delegate Assembly voted 30-1 in favor of the 6-class system. And all of this voting and approving, never once did an OSAA staff member ever cast a vote. People put OSAA out there like this organization and all the closed door and these secret... It's truly... OSAA staff never votes on this. These are member schools collecting information from member schools. We're representatives of ourselves. It's not some terrible group of Ku Klux Klan people hiding in places. That's not the way it is. It was us. And ultimately, with the input from everyone who wanted to actively participate, the choice was made that in the best interest of the students across the entire state, not in every single district, but across the entire state, this was the best system to go to. No classification's perfect, but the process is as good as you can get. This decision wasn't made by the employees of the OSAA or for the employees of the OSAA, but it was made for the schools across the state. As a committee, we spent more time on this one single item and topic than the state board spends on all their decisions over the course of the entire year. Please let the people who know high school sports in Oregon make these important decisions, and don't let this become a political football in the hands of people or a person who is elected and supported by one particular part of the state. It's a statewide issue. It's a statewide classification and districting committee. Right now, every school and every district from around the state has a voice in the process and ultimately in the decision. Don't ruin what works for the masses in order to satisfy a noisy few. Thanks.
Well, could have done without the last sentence, but thank you for the rest of what you had to testify about. Ms. Parent, you're next.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Krista Parent, Superintendent of Schools in South Plains School District, Cottage Grove, Oregon. I'm also a member of the Delegate Assembly, and prior to that was on their Budget Committee. And many years ago, as Senator Cruz mentioned, I was also a Southern Oregon athlete and played on Friday and Saturday nights. So through all these experiences, I have the utmost respect for the OSAA and what it does and stands for kids in this state. As mentioned many times before, this organization is accountable to the 290 member schools, and the changes that have occurred in this organization over the years have been generated by the member schools, as has been mentioned many times before. Representatives from my school district, South Plains School District, participated in all phases of the reclassification process over a 13-month period of time. The resulting changes in the classifications was not the best result or the best outcome for our high school, Cottage Grove High School. In the old classification system, the cutoff from 3A to 4A was set at 900, and we had a hard time even then staying under 900. In the new classification system, that cutoff is set at 850 for a 4A to 5A move, and we'll have a very hard time staying in that classification. So overall, the decision was not best for us personally, but at that time, we stood by the decision, and we still stand by that decision because there was ample opportunities for public input. Our voice was heard, our issues were considered, and in the end, the decision was made that was best for the whole and all of the kids in the state of Oregon. The intent of the change from the very beginning, we believe, was to make fair competition, increased opportunities for students across the state, and I believe that happened. Again, the request for this classification change came from the member schools, not from OSAA staff. They did not make this decision themselves. I think any time a major change like this occurs, there will be winners and losers, so to speak, but I believe with this particular change, there were mostly winners. I think the Oregon Department of Education has a lot on their plate right now. Many changes have occurred at the federal and state level that have increased their oversight and accountability expectations and requirements, particularly in relationship to No Child Left Behind. I think it would be particularly tough for the Department of Education staff, as lean as it is right now, and despite their good efforts, it would be difficult to take on this additional responsibility. I think with any major changes of this magnitude, there needs to be a thorough review of the changes, and I would recommend that we put this back in the hands of the member schools. Let's take a look after 1 year of implementation. I think a major change would not be the right move at this time. Let's take a look at it and make some maybe minor modifications or recommendations after this review. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Parent. Because your last statement leads me to ask you this question. The State Board approved the rule change, and they only approved it for 1 year, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. All right. Mr. Chambers?
Good morning, Madam Chairman. I'm Scott Chambers, President of Chambers Communications. We own and operate television stations in Eugene, Medford, Klamath Falls, and Bend. And why am I here today to talk about redistricting? Well, I'm not. I'm here today to speak about the governance issue that I see in these three bills. First of all, I think in the state of Oregon, like was just said, education funding, student scholastic achievement, school improvements, and more effective communications with the communities that those schools operate in are the priorities. We need to continue to keep people interested in Oregon schools, and we need to continue to have voters support those schools at the polls. And how do we do that? Well, we do that in part in small communities through athletic competition. I'm listed as a Eugene resident. I'm actually not. I'm from Pleasant Hill, which is a 4A school. It actually teeters between 3 and 4A. But to me, it's still the center of the community. We don't have performing arts centers, and we don't have other activities by and large. But when you have high school sports, you have parents turning out, you have students involved. It's not really a travel issue because that's been there for a long time. Those are real issues, and scholastic class time loss, those are real issues, but those can be addressed with scheduling. But I think if we take out of the hands of professional administrators the responsibility of managing this very complex task of high school activities, then we're making a mistake. I happen to work very closely with both Oregon and Oregon State athletic departments at the university level. And I can tell you that in working with the OSAA as their television partner, we find that the OSAA is as organized, if not more so, than those two universities at the athletic department level. They're extremely well run. The competitions that they put on are vast. I've attended many of those. I've seen the support that has come from these new communities that are now competing at the championship level and what that has done to energize those communities around the support of the schools. And I think that's important to keep in mind. So I think, you know, in closing, it's critical that we keep professional educators responsible for the administration of Oregon high school activities, that we keep the businesses interested in supporting those schools, and ultimately we'll see success at the polls and the voters supporting Oregon schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chambers. I'm going to quickly question Senator Metzger.
Yes. Dealing with the redistricting, as you know, we have a dispute here that we're talking about, and we're a number of schools from the 6A classification of our school. And I'd be curious about your perspective on this, because it does always seem to be the larger schools that have some of those issues in terms of redistricting. And my experience has been, we're not talking about the golf team, we're not talking about the debate team, and no one talks about the swimming team, that football really seems to drive this, is in terms of when we really get down to redistricting. I would just be curious as your perspective on that, from serving on that role.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Metzger, originally the committee started with football only as a proposal, looking because of the competitive balance issues and the safety issues, really, with the competitive balance, is football. And normally, you know, you can get beat by 50 in basketball and you don't get hurt. Football, that's not the case. So that's where we started. And ultimately, it was the schools from around the state saying, wait a minute, we've got competitive balance issues in every sport, and we need to address those things and look at those things. And ultimately, that's where they directed us to go. And we truly were a sounding board, collecting their information and then trying to put together what the schools across the state wanted. It is at all classification levels. The issues are the same, and in this case, you know, there were a couple of the larger schools that weren't happy. There's always, in every classification, there's going to be schools and districts that are happy and some that aren't. It truly can't be done to where every single school is happy. And you can sit here and really look at Eugene's situation and say, yeah, I understand that completely. The issue, though, as we looked at, was how do you fix that without, you know, getting into a Madras situation? And that's what it came down to. And so, not easy decisions, and truly, we made them with the best intentions in mind, and I believe, I appreciate hearing up here, it's going well. The sixth classification was a huge change. It's working for most of the state. And there's no classification that's ever going to be perfect.
Question. Senator Westland?
Well, just a comment. And it's Mr. Shield?
Shield.
Shield.
Yes.
Yeah, I can read that. The chair responded to your last comment, which I'd like to put that in context. You know, any time you have a problem, in a large statewide problem, such as presented by interscholastic athletic competitions, and you make a change, I mean, you are going to impact some schools or entities more favorably than others. And I think some of those that are, you know, feel the impact or the change the most are certainly going, you know, have concerns and vocalize them. And so I think that was a generic comment that Randy was making, and, you know, not directed at any specific individuals, because we'd all be doing the same thing if it impacted us. And you know, it's kind of like you get 290 people, you know, 290 family members come to a picnic and say, okay, what are we going to do for our afternoon's activities? I mean, I don't know how you got all of this you know, as much collaboration and consensus as you did in a very difficult situation. So it's really a Herculean task, and I appreciate your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't think Senator Metzger was done. You had one more follow-up
question. I just want to make an observation here, because I have worked on this quite a bit over the last number of years. And I know you looked at the all-football thing. I do believe that, while it's not the total issue, I do believe it. The records that I've looked at, going back to 2003, that's been a dominant point of conversation. And when I look at Hood River, in which spawned 388, in which, by the way, the Delegate Assembly, there was only one. Eugene did not support it. And Salem did not support it. And Coos Bay, they all voted against Hood River because of in terms of the lack of time, the lack of the cost and away from students was not factors that motivated them. And the only one that supported Hood River was Medford on that issue for the Executive Board or the Delegate Assembly or the Redistricting Committee. But I think here's the real important part. I'd just like to ask the OSAA, the member schools, which is the member schools, is to, you know, think out of the box a little bit. We're still operating out of the 60s. And the experience is when Hood River was moved to the Intermountain League, and I understand the arguments the other way, they experienced a 22% loss in participation. You know, forget the other costs that were articulated by some of the people here. That is true. But that's important because athletics is important. Speech and debate is important. We need to have these kids participate. And so, you know, when they lose that, we lose a lot, you know, from their school lives. And I would just take a look and say, you know, maybe we don't need to operate out of the 60s. And I go back to my days in sports and when other schools at the collegiate level faced difficult situations like this and realizing it's never going to be perfect, is that when baseball was diminishing in the Northwest and Oregon dropped its baseball team, who played in the Pac-10? The University of Portland and Portland State. Who plays in the Big Ten for football? Penn State. But they don't play in other leagues. So, but we shuffle everybody all around the state, in every area. Like I mentioned golf or debate. I remember when Pleasant Hill had the best track person in the state, and all it took was him to win everything. But we dominate with football. And I think if we just go back and look at that again sometime, when we look at redistricting, and look at our criteria, that maybe we can do things a little bit differently and meet some of the needs of some of what we now call 6A schools without necessarily providing all the travel problems, the cost problems for some of these schools. We've always played Tuesday, Friday basketball games. You know, maybe we should look at some things a little bit differently now in 2007. I guess that's just my comment, Madam Chair, because it's a difficult job that the OSA does. It's huge. There will always be dissenters on that. But I think part of the problem is that we still look at a 1960s model, it's a one-size-fits-all for a district. And I realize that not everyone looks at that the same way. But I think if we look at those major sports, particularly football, sometimes differently, I think it solves 95% of the problems that we continue to face in the legislature and that you face and the hard work that you do. So that would just be my comment.
All right. Thank you, Senator Metzger. I'm not going to ask you to respond because we're rapidly out of time. Thank you. We've got 9 people signed up to testify. I'm not going to be able to get to all of you, but there are some of you who have traveled a great distance. You were on scheduled panels, but I'm going to mix you up a little bit. Let's see. Roger Nyquist, Lynn County Commissioner, come forward. Margaret Sturza from Madras, all the way from Madras. Come on up, and Mary Brabin from Eagle Point, and then Greg Mulkey's from Coos Bay, and I don't think we can get another chair up there, but these folks came from a long way. Well, not Mr. Nyquist. And so, anyway, you've got about a minute. That's all we've got time for your oral testimony. If you've got something written, we'll take a look at it. But.
Madam Chair, Senators, thank you for the record. Roger Nyquist, I am the chair of the Linn County Board of Commissioners. I am here in that official capacity this morning. I'm here to tell you that the redistricting process works. 5 years ago, Lebanon was put into a league that to us didn't make any sense. We engaged the OSA in dialogue immediately. We knew it was 4 years before we had a shot to fix it. Our ability to testify and engage that process was open, and the problem's been resolved. It works for those who engage the process.
And the county commissioners are all in support of your testimony?
Absolutely, they are.
Okay.
The bills you have before you move this process more akin to a legislative redistricting process, which I also have participated in. And I can tell you, we laugh, but that's exactly where this is going. Don't kid yourself. The last legislative redistricting process,
you're getting all our cold
who was really left to one elected official to decide, resulted in 37 lawsuits before the Supreme Court. You've got one, so that's not great that we've got disagreement, but it could get worse, and I would propose that the bills before you will do that. I agree with Senator Metzger that there needs to be an emphasis on participation. At Linn County, we've never had to send the sheriff out to a ball field to arrest a kid. And part of participation, part of what goes into that is having a competitive balance. You've got to go to the 6A program to do that with the urban growth boundaries and the population growths and centers that we have in Oregon. The problem is going to get worse in the way of population growth and disparity, not better. Furthermore, Senator Pruzanski and his constitutional question, if you take that to another level, it would seem that it would prohibit schools from delegating the authority to booster clubs to run concessions. I doubt you want to go there. And to the matter of the public meetings issues, it's a lot like the same thing you all hear with caucus meetings all the time. I mean, not all meetings are open to the public. And then the last thing, should you, despite our efforts, go forward with this, I would request that you do a fiscal analysis on these bills, because any of the three will cost the state more money. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nyquist. And we don't have time for questions, but if you could step back and allow Mr. Mulkey to come forward in your chair, and we'll take one of the women at the table.
My name is Margaret Sturza. I have been at Madras High School for 30 years.
Oh, my.
My first year of teaching and coaching, I traveled 10,000 miles on a school bus, and I've survived 30 years of that. Our students have a much higher GPA than our athletic students have a much higher GPA than our non-students, and so I would say that athletics serve them well. I've been a member of many committees on the OSAA because I am a member of the Oregon Athletic Directors Association. Madras High School is one of the 290 members. We are the OSAA. We are a self-governing body. We have a very democratic and thorough process for making decisions concerning our members. And I would urge this committee to let us govern ourselves. We know what's best for students. We look at what's best for each and every student. We cannot satisfy everyone. Senate Bill 382 and 217 want to take that decision-making process out of the very hands of the people who are highly qualified to make such decisions through a democratic process and place it in the hands of one person, the superintendent of public instruction. This reeks of a top-down style of management and, quite frankly, a dictatorship. Senate Bill 522 is very similar to Senate Bill 382, but appears to allow the superintendent to pick and choose what areas she will administer. The main focus of all three of these bills is the placement of schools and athletic districts. Some people in our state are unhappy. We've heard that about the placement of schools in the sixth classification system and are trying to regulate the placement through legislation. That's ridiculous. The recently enacted...
Sturza, I don't mean to cut you off, but you're reading your testimony, and we can't have you do that because we don't have the time. And I read it, the rest of it, and you're going to reiterate what's been said today. So is there one final thing you'd like to say to the committee that's not in your written testimony?
Madras High School was probably one of the schools not served best by this reclassification, but we understand the process. And we have stood by the process. It was fair. And we want to go on. This is what's best for our state.
Thank you. That's what we want to hear. All right. And the next woman, and then Mr. Mulkey.
My name is Mary Bravin, and I serve on the OSAA board. And I represent the thousands of kids who do speech and debate, choir, band, cheerleading.
More than athletics. You're more than athletics.
Yes, I am. But I also represent the kids who do athletics, who participate in athletics on that board. What I would like to say is, and reiterate is, change is painful. It has always been painful. You know that in the jobs that you are doing today, and all of these people in the room know that also. Someone is always unhappy when we make decisions, no matter what that decision happens to be. But we try to do that through process. I won't take a lot of time, but I would like to say that we are moving in education a different direction. We are moving to the world as a classroom. Missing class is not just about being in a room and being with somebody providing direct instruction. It's about experiencing all that you can through various avenues. I think extracurricular provides those. I think most people agree that that happens, but I think there are ways that we can compensate for not being in classrooms. And I think that we hear a lot about that, but I think you will find that students are given the opportunities, and on the committees that you serve on, certainly through things such as career learning experiences, classrooms are not becoming, and time is not the constraint that it always was. So I would like to look outside the box in that area as well. I would like to finish what I have to say with the words that are carved in the marble outside this building, and it says, "A free state is maintained by the voluntary union of the whole people joined together under the same body of laws for the common welfare and the sharing of benefits justly apportioned." I think that's what this has all been about with OSAA. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Mulkey, you're going to be our last witness of the day. Unfortunately, I won't get to the last four folks.
Well, I appreciate it, Madam Chair. I echo what these two ladies have said. I understand being at Marshfield High School. I'm the athletic director there and have lived in that area my entire life other than going to college. The things that I would like to say that maybe are a little bit different. I am one of those athletic directors with three other that are here that were part of the Eugene School District for years. Marshfield High School has traveled to the Eugene area to eight schools for over 50 years. Up Highway 38. I'll leave it with that.
I graduated high school in Reedsport, so
okay,
I know what
so
you're
you
talking
understand.
About.
All right. I can also tell you that the four athletic directors that are here, including myself today, that are the 5A athletic directors in the Eugene, still the Midwestern League, fully support the 5A or the 6 classification. Unfortunately, the two athletic directors that couldn't be with us here today are the two athletic directors, the other 50%, that are representing the Eugene School District. If you would get an honest opinion from those two, they would say they also support the 6 classification. Unfortunately, they're in a difficult situation and are not going to say that. Why wouldn't they support it when both North Eugene High School and Churchill High School will represent our league at the 5A basketball tournament starting tomorrow? The one last thing I would like to, a couple things I'd like to say. I'd like to give a simple scenario. Let's say that you're a superintendent of a school district with 10 high schools. You have 10 principals. You ask those 10 principals to reconstruct the K-12 curriculum. They have a year to do that. They collect data. They interview people. After it's all said and done, 9 out of those 10 principals come together and all on the same page. This is the direction we want to go. However, the superintendent, the one individual principal is adamantly against it. The superintendent is very good friends or supports that individual. That superintendent takes their position, writes a policy, submits that policy to the school board, similar to the bills, and asks to take full authority and responsibility. That's how we feel the 90% of schools that are involved with this whole reclassification. The last thing I would like to say, maybe a solution is to take one of the school board members, have them a member of the OSAA, so that they can have a communication line and be heard. I thank you for your time, and I surely support, I do not support any of these bills the way they're written.
Thank you. Thank you for traveling so far and waiting. I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry we can't get to everyone else, but we have simply gone over and run out of time. But I felt that we gave lots of time to both sides today. If you did not get a chance to testify, you can submit written testimony now or later. We're not taking action on this bill today because, quite frankly, I don't know what action we are going to take. I want to have
some one-on-one conversations with members of my committee and see what it is that we'd like to do, if anything. But I do want to thank you all for your dedication and your trip here. We've just been handed something from someone else, so that's great. And I want to thank my committee for their indulgence in staying late, because we normally adjourn at 10:15. So thank you all.
Madam Chair, just one thing. I've never heard anybody quote the building before. I thought that was interesting.
I agree with you. I've never heard that done either. So there's always a first, and we always appreciate learning. So thank you very much. This committee is adjourned.